Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
Medical office, which has a really strong outlook because of the aging baby boomers. I was speaking at the medical office conference. They said, we don't call it medical office anymore. Now it's medical outpatient buildings. The reason is they can't get financing when they label it as office.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm your host, Joe Cornwell, and today we are live in Salt Lake City at the Best Ever Conference, sponsored by PreiShare. And today we have John Chang of Marcus & Millichap. He's the head of research and advisory services. He's been on the show several times, and today and this week at the conference, he has shared his economic outlooks. We've talked about multifamily, other areas of commercial real estate. He has a wide variety of experiences and knowledge, and we're going to be talking about the economic outlook and what investors and operators should be paying attention to. John, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on.
And I appreciate you returning. Now, you've been a long-time guest, so we appreciate you coming back. So why don't we start with your presentation this week. You opened up the conference with your economic outlook. Why don't we start and talk a little bit about what you're looking at, what are you paying attention to, and where do you see the real estate market as a whole going the next 12 to 36 months?
Yeah, for real estate, the biggest challenge out there is tied to interest rates and the Fed, and that's being affected by the economy as a whole. The question is inflation coming down? Is it going up? Where is it going to go? So you're stepping all the way back to the most fundamental thing in commercial real estate, which is jobs. And we're still seeing some really actually quite strong job creation. And there's questions about whether or not that's going to inherently create inflation. But at the end of the day, jobs does create demand for all types of commercial real estate. So we're still seeing good job formation. We're still seeing healthy retail sales. We're still seeing savings. When you factor in money market funds, savings are going up. So the economy is still structurally sound and still feeling pretty good. And the question will be for real estate investors, what happens with the Fed and what happens with interest rates as a byproduct of all that economic momentum?
And one of the things that you talked about this week that I found particularly interesting was the amount of shortage we have in housing as a whole. And what were your thoughts on how the shortage is going to impact renters and home buyers and some of the other key factors in the differences that that will create in the market?
Sure. Especially for multifamily investors in about a dozen markets, it's really hard to appreciate that we have a housing shortage because we're building more apartment units than we have since the 1980s in so many markets. We're going to add 480,000 new units this year, and it feels like that's a lot, and we got an overhang that we're going to have to burn through. But structurally, we are still running at about 3.5 million housing units in shortage. So we're just not getting enough housing units. So even though we build a lot and we have vacancy rates on the rise, those are going to be consumed. That overhang is going to be absorbed over the course of the next year. We did see household formation drop off really significantly over the course of the last year. It started to pick up this year and actually partway through 2023. But the reason that absorption dropped was because the media scared everybody. The Federal Reserve scared everybody. They said inflation, recession, all of these nasty things that scared people. And they said, well, I'm not moving out today. I'm not going to go rent my new apartment because I don't know if I'm going to have a job in 6 months. So we got over that hurdle. Consumer sentiment has started to pick up. We've seen improvement. We've seen absorption start to grow. We're predicting actually quite good absorption in 2024, but we have to get through this overhang of development that we have accumulated over the last couple of years and then go into the next cycle. Now, construction starts have already fallen. So the wave of construction will likely peak in 2024. Going into 2025, multifamily construction starts to drop off and it eases down. At the same time, assuming we don't hit a recession, then absorption will continue to rise and we get back into that shortage cycle. Vacancies start to drop, rent growth starts to revive, and we see that momentum again. The spread between the house payment on a median-priced home and the average rent in the United States is at an all-time high. It's over $1,300 for the house payment on a median-priced home versus the rent. And as a result, fewer and fewer people can afford to purchase a home. People are going to rent longer, and it's going to hold a much deeper audience of renters over a longer cycle than we've seen in the past.
Okay, and a couple things there that stuck out to me. So consumer confidence is one of the big factors in how we all feel in the economy. Is there a recession? Because it's not necessarily the data, but it's how it's perceived by the masses in the economy. And I knew you had something you want to add
there. Yeah, people often get these confused. There's consumer confidence, which is one measurement, and there's another one, which is the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index. Okay. Now, the Consumer Sentiment Index tracks very closely historically with absorption. Consumer confidence, not so much.
Okay.
So they sound like they're the same thing. Consumer confidence is more looking forward and would address the question, do you think you will have a good job in 6 months? That's confidence. It's looking forward. Consumer sentiment is, how do you feel about your finances today?
Okay.
And that's the nuance. That's the difference. So when we map it out, when we do a graph and we show consumer sentiment versus absorption, that sentiment index actually is a really good indicator of what happens with household formation going forward.
Gotcha. Okay. So in either metric, though, the emotional feeling attached to that isn't necessarily a direct reflection of the data that we all have or that we can look up or that you, obviously, in your position put together. But the emotional impact is going to drive decision-making of home buyers and of tenants, if I'm
Absolutely.
Understanding.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then the second part of that was, I know you gave some of the data, and of course this is audio, so we don't want to get overly data complicated, but broad numbers, what are you projecting of our current shortage of housing? And I don't know how far you've mapped the data, but if you could give us a 3 or 5 year outlook on what will be delivered and what will we still be short in overall housing numbers?
So I can't give you a good forecast on what's going to happen with the shortage. I don't have really good data on construction numbers going forward. But what I can tell you is that historically, looking back over the last 5 to 10 years, the housing shortage really hasn't changed very much. So even though we're building a lot of housing units, it's being offset by population growth, and it's been about the same. It's right around, different people are measuring it different ways. They come up with numbers somewhere between 2 and 5 million. Our metric using Freddie Mac's standards is about 3.5 million shortage, and it's been about the same for the last few years.
Okay, so it's not necessarily growing or shrinking, but it's staying consistent because we're not able to match the demand with supply.
Exactly. Now, it's going to affect different markets in different ways.
Yes.
So think about this. The state of California completes about the same number of apartment units each year as the metro of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Okay.
So this is an entire huge state.
Sure.
With a huge population, really expensive rents, but you can't build apartments there very easily. There's a lot of barriers to construction. And as a result, they have housing shortages, as opposed to, say, Dallas, where you can build more easily and you have a lot less restrictions. And so you don't have as much of a housing shortage in a market like Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about markets. And I know you had mentioned it, all of this, everything we're talking about today is market specific. So give me some of your perspective on your data, your opinion. What markets should we be paying attention to, and what are going to be most impacted by the housing shortage that we have today?
Well, you kind of have to be careful with this, especially right now.
Okay.
Because the places that have the greatest shortages are most prone to bring in rent control. So we've seen this in California. We've seen it in a lot of markets across the country. It looks like Boston, Massachusetts, it's a risk. And we're seeing this rent control effort as a byproduct of bad construction policy and housing shortages. So they're not going to necessarily be the best place to invest because of those metrics, unless you know the nuances of that local market. There are experts in markets where they have those restrictions, and those guys are going to be able to generate those returns. So when it comes to what are the best markets out there for that supply and demand metric, what I look at is short-term movements where the builders aren't going to be able to adapt quickly enough,
okay,
or where construction costs today are just at a record high. So raising capital to do construction financing. The banks and the lenders are somewhere around 10%. The cost of construction materials, the cost of construction labor are all very high. So that's why we're seeing construction starting to drop off. So I'm looking for places where maybe it had a little too much construction, but where I see the pipeline coming down as being good opportunities, especially if you have good inbound population growth. So if you look at our investment index that we produce in our national investment forecast reports, you have markets that have been strong growth markets like Dallas, like Phoenix, ranking towards the top, Las Vegas. These are all markets which are not supply constrained, but where the cost of construction is actually going to constrain that supply.
Okay.
And then you still have that population and employment growth driving demand for housing.
Okay, and let's also touch on the immigration. I know that was a part of your presentation this week. Obviously, it's a big part of migration patterns. It's a big part of how the U.S. is increasing in population, not just through natural birth. So what are your thoughts on both legal and illegal as far as it will impact the real estate markets specifically?
Okay. Yeah, this is a touchy subject.
Sure.
It's a political hot button,
Certainly
this year in an election year. But what I will say is this. If you look back at the cycle between 2016 and 2020, and of course 2020 was the pandemic, so there was nobody migrating anywhere. But during that cycle, we saw a steep reduction in legal immigration to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So that is people moving here legally. And as a result, or as a byproduct of that, we also saw the labor shortage get very severe.
Okay.
And as those labor shortages got severe, we saw a lot more wage inflation, and that was a spur that created other inflationary pressures. So as a country, historically, we have always, what I term, imported labor. We've always brought people to our country. It's a nation of immigrants. We've all come here in order to pursue the opportunities that America has to offer. So when we slow down that migration to the United States, we're giving up that labor force that we really need in order to continue to grow our economy. And then you get into the demand for housing and retail and office space and hotels and everything else that is driven by that. So we need to sustain legal migration in the United States. Now you bring up illegal immigration and the surges we've been seeing on the borders and the political hot button that this has become, it's really difficult to speak to a real estate impact on that, but it's definitely a challenge.
It's so interesting because I just thought about it when you were speaking where we'll take the politics out of it, legal, illegal, whatever. Bottom line is we have people coming here, right? However they got here, I don't care. The point being that it drives both sides of the dynamic when it comes to the economics of real estate because you have, again, a shortage of labor workers, however they got here. Of course, we all know there's a lot of immigrants who come here and do trades and they do labor. I'm in the construction business, so I could speak to that firsthand. But again, so they're creating jobs, they're creating demand for housing, but it's almost a dynamic where you need labor and you need people to immigrate here, as you just mentioned. That is going to help drive down costs of construction so we can create more housing. Yet, everyone coming here, however they got here, is again going to create more demand for housing. And of course, that'll be regional and that'll be market dependent. And we can look at data on the trends that we see on the volume of people moving specific places. But it's just so interesting how those two dynamics are almost push and pull, so to speak.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the other dimensions, you mentioned construction. One of the things that I've been focusing in on lately is the aging baby boomer population.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the baby boom population, over the next 5 years, a lot of that demographic will be retiring. So right now we're seeing about 11,000 baby boomers retire per day. Mm. And as a result, we're going to experience brain drain and the loss of skilled labor and tradespeople specifically. A lot of the trade schools in the United States have been closed over the years. We just don't have as many plumbers, electricians, carpenters, and tradespeople in skilled construction as we have in the past. And one of the best places to bring that in is through immigration, and we need to look at how we can do that because we do need to fuel that construction industry and other businesses.
Yeah, no doubt. And as I said, firsthand I could speak to in just my 8 years in business, how many trade people I've seen leave the business, how difficult it is to find skilled subcontractors, contractors, trades of any type, and it is being backfilled heavily by immigrants. Again, however they got here, it's being massively backfilled by typically Hispanic immigrants, and that's just the reality of where most markets are. So one thing I wanted to cover today was your personal outlook on investments. What type of assets are you most interested in? Obviously, you have a front row seat to this data, so you're able to make really educated decisions on investing. Walk us through your philosophy. What markets, what type of assets are you most bullish on? Where, if any, are you investing this year? And again, in that, let's keep it to that 12 to 36 month projection on what you're interested in.
Sure. Quite honestly, I believe pretty much all types of commercial real estate have a relatively strong outlook, surprisingly. I'll just start with retail. So retail has been performing far better than most people realize. The vacancy rate on retail is at a record low. The rent growth has been positive, and the momentum for the sector is quite strong. So we're seeing a lot more investors shifting over into the retail side, and that momentum is good, and the yields on those properties are going well. But you really need to understand the retail market. You look at the industrial sector, lots of construction, a lot of overhang, but that construction's isolated to about 8 metros, and I know a lot of investors are pursuing industrial, especially infill industrial. That's a great opportunity. You look at office. I want to touch office. Everything you read, hear, see, smell is that office is getting murdered. And that is true in some places, predominantly large, 250,000 square foot and larger, older, built in 1980s, office towers in the urban core of cities.
Okay.
Vacancy rate, 25%. Now, smaller, newer, suburban office, average vacancy rate, 10%.
Okay.
But financing any office right now is really difficult. Medical office, which has a really strong outlook because of the aging baby boomers. I was speaking at the medical office conference. They said, we don't call it medical office anymore. Now it's medical outpatient buildings. The reason is they can't get financing when they label it as office. So they're really trying to position away from that label. So medical, seniors housing, that's going to get a lift from demographics. Now, me personally, I'm looking mostly at housing because I do believe that housing is going to remain in demand. I see it continuing to strengthen despite some of the headwinds we've seen over the last year. I still see a lot of opportunity there. I understand it best. I understand the drivers, and I encourage anybody who's investing in real estate to become an expert in whatever property type it is. They are each unique, and they each have different unique opportunities. I look at markets that are growing and where there is some sort of inefficiency, where something is changing. And I try to key in on that change and figure out where's the opportunity, whether that's a new employer coming into the market, a major developer, or there is an area in the path of gentrification or something like that. And I try to capture that change in my investment strategies.
That's great advice.
We'll get back to the show, but first, some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. If you're an investor like me, you're probably looking for one platform to manage the banking and finance needs of your entire portfolio. The good news is, there is one. It's called Baselane, and it's the number one banking platform built for independent real estate investors that reduces busy work so you can focus on growing your business. With Baselane, you can earn up to a 4.19% annual percentage yield and 5% cash back on debit card spending with no monthly fees. With a simplified view of your cash flow and expenses, you can retire those tedious spreadsheets. You can also manage unlimited virtual accounts and cards, and even open separate accounts for each property or unit. Join more than 40,000 real estate investors who trust Baselane for their banking, property management, and bookkeeping. Head over to baselane.com/Joe and sign up today for a chance to win a $500 Amazon gift card. That's baselane.com/Joe.
Two things I want to follow up on. Retail. What specifically in retail should people be paying attention to? Meaning, what parts of retail are doing well, and what should investors and operators stay away from?
Okay, so there's a lot of different types of retail. You have single-tenant retail, which is really going to be interest rate-driven. That's pretty much a coupon clipper. We'll set that one aside. You have regional malls. Regional malls got murdered. Those ones are outliers. They're at higher risk. unless you're in a position to pick one up that's in a very good location and you can redevelop it and bring in housing, maybe a little bit of office, and other amenities to really create a walkable community out of that old regional mall.
Gotcha.
But that's not for the faint of heart, and you really want to have experts. What I'm really seeing lately, we had a strong run of neighborhood and community centers anchored by groceries, and those have done very well. But right now, I'm seeing a lot of investors favor the smaller unanchored centers that are proximate to other drivers, like a larger shopping center or something like that.
Okay.
Those have been performing at a really positive level. You get a higher cap rate, a higher going-in yield, and there's still a lot of opportunity for value creation.
Okay, and I'm going to make an assumption that these are retail that is not as exposed to online or tech takeover, meaning service-related or
yes,
something that they want in their neighborhood, something they want to go and physically be in location on. Is that a correct assumption?
Absolutely. And that was the progression over the last 15 years. Everybody remembers the retail apocalypse and how digitization and e-commerce and the digital transformation really impacted the retail sector. And we've seen most of that play through. Most retail centers have effectively repositioned already.
Okay.
A lot more services, a lot more experiential, or a lot more unique things where you have to physically walk into the store and get it.
Gotcha.
Those are the ones who have survived. And ironically, when I talk to the office investors, they liken it to that digital transformation that impacted retail is what is affecting the office space today.
And that's my next question. So where do you see the future of office going in the next 12 to 36 months?
Historically, our mindset has been bring people to the office. So if you rewind the clock, say 20 years ago, if you got a job, the expectation was that you were going to relocate to wherever that job was and go work there, go into the office, and find a place to live near that office. That was the historical standard. That was normal. Today, the labor market has been so tight. We just have these very low unemployment rates, 3.8%, and the expectation is changing from we're going to make you come to our office to we're going to bring our office to you. So you're seeing a lot more use of suburban office come into play, smaller office spaces, because you still want that collaboration. You still want that interaction. You want the employees to work together and create something together. My whole research team is working in the office every day together so that we can create something unique and interesting, and that requires collaboration. Right now, we're still in an in-between stage. So we moved and went home because of a pandemic. And then somehow that morphed into, I'm going to stay and work home 2 days a week and so on. We see large companies, big corporations, 25,000 or more employees. We see a much lower percentage going into the office or coming into the office fewer days a week. Whereas small companies, you see people come into the office far more frequently. So big corporation, maybe 3 days a week. Small company, maybe 4 days a week. So as we go forward, we're also seeing a lot of new companies being formed and predominantly small companies. So I think the office absorption is going to continue to grow, but it is going to be more suburban, it's going to be more collaborative, and we're going to see less demand for the urban core office, those old office towers, because people just don't want to have to commute to downtown anymore.
And my last question on that is, what do you see those being repurposed to? If you had to take an educated guess, we could use a specific example. Obviously, everyone has heard the horror stories of downtown San Francisco probably being the preeminent office decay, so to speak.
Yeah.
What do you think happens with those going forward?
It's really, really hard to say. Cities are going to have to reinvent themselves. And I happen to be speaking at Economic Outlook Breakfast in Portland, Oregon. Portland, Oregon office market in the urban core is one of the worst in the country. I know we get the headlines out of San Francisco. Portland's fighting them for first place. So they came to me and said, let's take all these office buildings and convert them into apartments. And I said, okay, one, very expensive.
Yeah.
Two, very hard to do. And three, the vacancy rate in downtown Portland is the submarket with the highest apartment vacancy rate in the whole metro.
Okay.
So you had an 8% apartment vacancy rate in downtown already. What are you going to do? Add more inventory there? That's super expensive. It doesn't help anybody. So what does this get changed into? It's hard to say. I think ultimately it will become office again. There may be some housing components. I think they're going to have to revive retail. But you're going to have to create more walkable cities where people want to be. And the demographics is actually working against that right now. You had the millennial generation 10 years ago all about live, work, play because they were in their 20s. Now your Gen Z generation just isn't as big as the millennial generation. And quite honestly, downtown's not as walkable as it was. Mm. So it's going to take time. We're going to have to go through a full cycle before we get there again. It's going to be a journey.
So to summarize, we'll see what happens.
All right, fine. Be that way.
Yeah, very good. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Best Ever Conference. Obviously, this is my first time here. It's been an amazing experience. We've had incredible speakers such as yourself. What does this mean to you? Why do you come to these things? And why should the listener to this podcast be here next year?
Okay. I participate in a lot of conferences. I attend a lot of these things. I speak at a lot of conferences every year. And the Best Ever Conference is truly one of my favorite. I really enjoy coming to this event because of the dynamics of the people who are here and the interaction, the camaraderie, the conversations, the learning opportunities, and just how so many of the people here are so curious about different ways to approach different projects. There's deals being done, there's investments being made. I talk to a lot of our clients here. Almost every investor here is active in the marketplace. We do business at Marcus Millichap with a lot of them. So I really feel it's important for me to be here to help my clients as a representative of my company to help them make better decisions and share whatever insights I can. But at the end of the day, it's just a lot of fun here.
Yeah, it's incredible. I've learned a ton. I've met a lot of people that you know from afar, right? LinkedIn, social media, whatever. And I've followed some of these people. I've looked up these people. I've read their books. I've talked to them on podcasts, whether interviewed or hosted. But getting to meet somebody face-to-face, it's the next step in building a relationship. And so obviously I'm biased, but what I've heard from talking to the guests here and the people that have attended this conference is that out of all the big real estate conferences that happen all over the country, many people have honestly said that this is their favorite. This is the one they make sure they're at every year. So, John, we appreciate you coming. I've learned a lot. Our last segment is the best ever lightning round. Are you ready?
All right, I'm ready to go.
All right, give me your best ever book recommendation since the last time you were on the show.
You know what? I actually like books on behavioral economics.
Okay.
That is something that has a tremendous impact on real estate that most people don't understand. The one that I really enjoyed is called Predictably Irrational, by Dan Ariely. That is actually a fascinating book that shows that most economists don't know what they're talking about. So it makes it very interesting to understand how people do things that you would think they wouldn't do, but he proves it in scientific ways.
Very cool. What is the best ever way you like to give back?
The best ever way I like to give back is actually through the young people in the community. I think there's a lot of opportunity to teach and to help them grow and develop. Honestly, most of my team is fresh out of college. So I try to spend a lot of time mentoring them and helping them understand real estate and business. And frequently they come to me after they've been with me for 6 months and they say, in the last 6 months, I learned more than I did in my entire education at college. And I really have a much better grasp of how things are really work in the real world.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. So John, obviously you're an expert in the industry. You're an investor in real estate. So give me a mistake that you made in one of your investments and the lesson that you learned from it.
Honestly, my biggest mistake is not investing more. Honestly, the deals that I've done have generally worked out well. Now, there's a lot of reasons for that. There's been tails in the back. We have a lot of data. And quite frankly, if I can't make money in real estate, I'm in trouble because I have access to the best of the best.
Yeah.
But I really should have gone in a lot more aggressively a lot sooner. That was probably, in retrospect, what I go, man, I missed it.
Just the opportunity cost of not taking bigger steps and bigger risks?
Yeah, it was too cautious. I was just playing out too cautious over the years, and I blame my wife.
That's great advice. Always blame the partner. John, thank you so much. How can our listeners connect with you, learn more about you?
Sure, absolutely. I am on LinkedIn, so you can look me up on LinkedIn, John Chang. I'm also the head of research for Marcus Millichap, so if you go to the Marcus Millichap website, you can download all of our reports and our information, and all my contact information is there as well.
Very cool. We'll be sure to link to that in the show notes. And again, John, thank you so much for joining the podcast. Thank you so much for being here live at Best Ever Conference and presenting so much this week. Every time you're on stage, I learn something new, so we really appreciate your time there and here.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Best Ever listeners, thank you so much for joining us live at Salt Lake City Best Ever Conference 2024, again sponsored this year by PreIShare. We hope to see you all here at the conference next year. If you didn't make it this year, be sure to get your tickets now. The cost to go up throughout the year, so if you're going to be here and you don't want to miss out again, make sure you buy your tickets now. If you got value from today's conversation, be sure to share this with someone else who could gain value from it. Make sure you follow and subscribe and join us so you don't miss any episodes of the Best Ever podcast. Thank you all and have a best ever day.
Hi, Best Ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the Best Ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access. And you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.